Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fresh Take from the What Fresh Hell podcast. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And today we are talking to Dr. Michaeline Duclef. She's here to talk to us about her new book, Hunt, Gather, Parent. Michaeline is a correspondent for NPR's Science Desk, and she was part of a Peabody Award-winning team that covered the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. She has a doctorate in chemistry from the University of California, Berkeley, and a master's degree in viticulture and enology. Her new book was an instant New York Times bestseller. It's called Hunt, Gather, Parent: What Ancient Cultures Can Teach Us About the Lost Art of Raising Happy, Helpful Little Humans. Michaeline, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
My first question is, what is viticulture and enology? I actually looked it up and it wasn't in the dictionary.
That's a specialty if it's not in the dictionary.
You're going to love it. I actually have a degree in winemaking and grape growing.
Wow. That's not what it... Now that I get to the root of it, it makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, that's it.
You're also a parent. That wasn't part of your introduction there, but you have a little girl. Is that right?
Yes, Rosemary, Rosie.
There are some parenting books that are like, hey, not only are you not doing a good job, but somewhere, someone far away is doing a great job. And that person is not you. And I think in approaching this book, I might have come in with a little bit of that, like, is this going to tell me that everyone's doing it better than me? I want to say this is not that book. What brought you to this particular book?
So, like I said, I have a little girl, Rosie, and right now she's five. But when this all started, this journey, she was 2.5, 3, and she was having a lot of tantrums, you know, like every day, a couple times a day. And my husband and I had no idea how to handle them. In fact, like I would read all these stuff in books and online, and I felt like everything I was doing was making it worse. And it got to the point where like I'd pick her up and she would just like slap me across the face like multiple times a week and I would actually duck.
I have been there.
Yeah. And at the same time, like you said, I'm a global health correspondent for NPR. And we were doing stories. I cover, you know, lots of different parts of the world. And they sent me down to the Yucatan to a small Mayan village to actually do a story about children and paying attention. But when I was down there, I just realized, oh my gosh, there's like a whole bigger story here. The moms there just kind of blew me away with their parenting. There was one mom in particular, Maria Tumborges, who she just had this way of interacting with her children that was just calm and confident. You know, there was no arguing, yelling, bickering. I mean, I was shocked. And yet at the same time, the kids were awesome. They were kind and generous with each other, with their parents, respectful and super, super helpful. One morning, Maria's oldest daughter woke up a little late. She was on spring break. She had stayed up watching a shark movie the night before. She gets up, walks in front of me and her mother and goes into the kitchen and starts washing the dishes, like completely voluntarily, like nobody asked her to do it. And Maria wasn't even that shocked by it. She was like, well, she's 12 and she knows what needs to be done. So she does it. And so here I was like, I couldn't even get my kid to not hit me, you know, and I was watching these moms like just, you know, really, I mean, I hate to say it, but make it look kind of easy. And so I left there really wanting to know more, not being able to find it in parenting books, but being able to find it a little bit in academic studies. But what I realized was like this form of parenting was not unique to the Yucatan by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, it's a super common way of interacting with children that parents have turned to for hundreds, probably thousands of years. And so I really wanted
to learn more. And I really wanted to learn how to relate to Rosie in a way that didn't create so much conflict and, you know, power struggles.
If you're looking at stuff and wondering if it's good advice or if it's going to work for you, how many centuries have people been doing it? That's a pretty good indicator of whether or not it's a good practice.
Yeah. And I would add to that, like, if it crops up in like multiple places, right? Like, you know, in the book, like we go to the Arctic, we go to the Tanzanian savannah, to the Yucatan, and you see this, I mean, every place is different, clearly, you know, but you see these common threads. And to me, that's like, whoa. Something must be working, right? In these very different, all the parents kind of do the same thing.
You kind of argue in the book, Michaeline, which really stuck with me, that it is in fact the Western style of parenting. You know, we sort of center ourselves, like the way we do things with the mom and two kids waving goodbye while the dad walks down the sidewalk to get on the train to the city to go to work. That's the way it's always been, quote unquote, that's the model that you're working toward. And we're so sort of blinded by that, that we don't even know what we don't know. And you talk about that the Western style of parenting is weird parenting. Can you talk about that acronym and what that means?
Yeah. So we do think that like our way of doing it is kind of deeply rooted, you know, in tradition, and it's anything but. It's very, very new. And several researchers, anthropologists and psychologists have looked at, compared Western style parenting to many different parts of the world. And they come up with this acronym WEIRD because we are actually the exception to the rule. And so WEIRD stands for Western, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic. So it really is this Western Europe, America, Australia, and Canada, right? And if you look at the way we do, there's about 50 to 60 things that we do that you just don't find anywhere else in the world, and you don't find throughout human history. So they're very new, like 100, 200 years old. And I argue in the book that they often, some of the things go against children's natural instincts and the way that they've kind of been designed to relate to their parents. And I think that that's one of the things that causes so much exhaustion, number one, but also so much conflict, because we are kind of constantly fighting children's natural instincts.
I think that's right. And I think it is important that it's a little bit recent, because we talk also about, like, both of our grandparents did not parent the same way we do. And can you give us a couple of like really tangible examples that people would go like, aha, yes, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you bring up grandparents, because my grandfather did not parent me this way. My mom kind of did, you know, and I see it in my mom, but not my grandfather. So one of the huge things is this constant stream of praise. And you could even actually expand it out to just constant stream of instruction, including praise. Like I actually recorded myself a bunch of times, first by accident, and then I started doing it intentionally, just to actually listen to how much verbal instructions I'm giving Rosie. And, you know, it is a constant, like, good job. Oh my gosh, you're so amazing. And like, oh, that's great. And then there's also the, don't do this, you know, don't wave that stick around. Don't put your fingers in your mouth. Come over here. You know, and this is super weird. Like, my grandfather did not treat me this way.
Capital W.
Yes. You know, and it is, especially for the little ones, I think, just stressful, right? I mean, I wouldn't want to be told what to do all the time, or even praised all the time. And I remember being with my grandfather and being like, whoa, this is really relaxing, because he's just not telling me what to do all the time. So that is a huge thing that's crazy. The other thing that we do is that we think we need to keep children busy, that we need to manage their time, right? That we couldn't just go about our lives and our work and let children kind of hang around or tag along and let them kind of figure out what to do. So we are like, schedule so many activities. We, you know, give them constant entertainment. And this, again, is just, it's unheard of in basically the rest of the world.
Michaeline, what stood with me as I was looking at some of the ways that I have been a weird parent along the way is that I did think that that was my assignment. Like, you talk about the idea that we have that as moms, we're supposed to narrate to teach our children language. We're supposed to be like, oh, and what's this? And what's this washcloth? And are we going to wash your arm with it? And am I now washing your, you know, your hand with it? And this sort of constant stream of teaching, teaching, teachable moments. What can you be learning right now? Was sort of the way I was supposed to be doing things. But that was,
yeah,
that was optional all along. I thought that was kind of mind blowing.
I mean, yeah, I thought that that's what really good parents do. I mean, that's what my pediatrician, you know, told me to do. You know, I think this all comes from like incredibly good intentions, right? Like, we want the best. We want kids to learn, and, you know, we want them to achieve, of course. But at the same time, it's exhausting, right? Like that form of parenting, at least for me, is completely exhausting. I can't keep it up for more than an hour a day. And, you know, especially during this pandemic, like I couldn't keep it up for 12 hours. And then, you know, and in the end, I think it's questionable how much good it's doing. And for some kids, I think it's doing them a disservice. You know, kids learn language without us having to narrate everything. And words are stimulating and, you know, can be stressful for little ones. And like I said, this is not anywhere else. And yet, you know, all Mayan kids learn to speak Spanish and Mayan, right? And, you know, the Tanzanian kids learn to speak the Hadzabe and Swahili and English, you know. So I think we can just let go of a lot of what we think is kind of the right way to do it and start to look more at the relationship. So is this stressful for me? Is this stressful for the kid? Is this causing conflict? You know, a lot of the moms just kept saying, look to the relationship. Is it improving the relationship?
And I think that I want to touch a little bit more on, is that stressful for me when we come back?
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Then redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value. Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own. And today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. This is what I was kind of trying to say about the book earlier. It's not just that, like, oh, these other people are doing it better and they've unlocked a secret. It's that this is a much less stressful version of parenting. And I feel like if people take anything away from this, that's the gift here, which is that, like, you're going 10 miles out of your way to do something that is naturally already occurring and you can stop doing that.
Yes, exactly. Yes, you summed it up very well. In fact, I think there could be doing some disservice too, right?
That, like, right. Even more so. That's right. It's not just that you're not helping. It's that you might be really making things a little worse.
Yeah, right. And I mean, kids are really resilient and we really underestimate their abilities to bounce back and, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. But yeah, I think that a lot of kids need quiet. You know, Rosie, my little girl, absolutely needs moments where no one is talking, right? There's no screen on. There's no me and her father saying things to her, just quiet. And once I started giving her that, like in the car, instead of narrating everything, because God, I was talking all the time to her.
Man, that's such a good one. Yeah.
You know, her behavior improved. Like she started calming down. And I think she was just overstimulated by all of the words.
You may have a kid who likes to play quietly in his room when other people are over. It's okay. They'll figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
Some kids need a lot of quiet.
you know, she would be like playing in the living room while I was cooking dinner or something. And I would actually have to like actively stop myself from going over there and telling her something, right? Like, oh, why don't you do this with the book? Or why don't you color this? And like, and then I started realizing like, why am I like inserting myself? Like every time I insert myself, I just give an opportunity for resistance and conflict. And so I just started having much more confidence in her ability to figure things out. You know, many cultures, they will actually, they just think that kids learn things on their own through exploration, right? And there's actually a lot of studies that say that if you interfere with a child when they're trying to like do a task, like color something or, you know, do something in the kitchen, that you will actually demotivate them and the time they spend and the focus they spend on it will go down. So I think we really underestimate their ability to learn on their own. They need us nearby. They want to be near us and in our world, but they need us to step back and let them do things.
Can we talk about what you learned from the Hadzabe in Tanzania to that specifically about the autonomy that they give their kids?
So this is so huge. So there's actually a recent study that came out looking at another hunter-gatherer group in the Congo Basin where a researcher actually measured how many times the parents or an adult or a caretaker or anybody gave an instruction to a child. You know, these are parents that are with their children all day, right? Besides school. And it was incredible to me. It was like on average of 3 commands per hour. And actually the little ones got more commands than the older ones because they thought that as kids grow up, you know, they should already know what to do. And almost all these commands were requests to help. And like help were like, oh, hold this cup or go get the water. So including kids in activities that teach cooperation and working together. But otherwise, the kids are allowed to make their own decisions and move around and do what they need to do as long as they're respecting others and being helpful. So I did the same experiment with myself where I like recorded myself and counted like how many commands. And I was clocking in at like 60 to 100 an hour. It was
wow,
incredible because it was, I didn't even realize I was doing it, right? It was just like, you know, don't stand there or come over here or get your shoes, you know, and it was just kind of this constant stream. And so one of the things I started doing with Rosie was actually restricting myself to 3 commands an hour.
Wow. And she's, wait, remind us how old she is.
She's 5. And I started doing this when she was 4. Mm. And I was doing it at not easy times. So like moments of conflict, like bedtime and morning routine. And I would use up the 3 commands in like 10 minutes.
We have to sit silently for the next 50 minutes.
But what happened when you stopped giving her the 60 commands?
Oh my gosh, our relationship improved enormously. Like I actually started to enjoy being with her. Like we, you know, started to get along. There was a kind of this peaceful coexistence that happened. But I have to also say that I could use nonverbal commands. So these are huge around the world. So like a look. I mean, the look is so powerful. Like you don't have to say something to a child. They already know what's right. They just, you know, you just have to remind them what's right. And all you need is like one good look at them with, you know, with everything you want to say or scream at them, just put it into your face. And it's so powerful. And they can't argue with your face. They can try, but it won't work, right? Because you're not talking.
It stops you from getting into something that happens a lot with kids, especially that age, is like it draws you into a negotiation or it draws you into conflict.
Yeah.
That's right. Like you don't really... The less you engage, the less room there is for that.
Yeah. And you know, engaging with them in negotiation and in conflict is only teaching them to negotiate with you, right? I mean, that is just all you're telling them is like, oh, I'm up for negotiation. I'm somebody you can negotiate with. One of the Mayan anthropologists told me that, you know, the Mayan parents just don't negotiate. And I never saw one negotiation actually in the whole time I was researching this book. And so kids learn really quickly that mom doesn't negotiate. So I'm not even going to try. And I have to say it works. It takes a little bit of time. You know, Rosie was 4 when I really decided I'm not going to negotiate. I'm not going to argue. Sometimes I'll just tap her on the shoulder and be like, I'm not going to argue with you and just walk away. But she kind of gets it. She negotiates a lot more with her father.
He's got to read the book. He's got to read it.
You know, he secretly read it. One day he said something to her and I looked at him and I was like, where did you learn that? That was really fantastic. And he was like, I read this, the Hadzabe section. So yeah, no negotiations, no arguing.
Can we pivot to the Mayans? Because what they do, right, when you're, so say you don't give your daughter 18 commands to put her shoes on, you just point to the shoes and then she puts on her shoes.
And then the weird Western way would be like, look at you putting on your shoes all by yourself, right? Like we'd give them a ticker tape parade the whole way out to the car because they put on their own shoes.
Fanfare.
And the Mayans kind of leave that out. Am I explaining that correctly?
Yeah, there's very, very little praise. I mean, really anywhere else except here is there very, very little praise. And yet these kids are, I think, have everything that we think praise is doing and some of the things that praise is accidentally doing, they don't have. Yeah, so I think the Maya parents, you know, maybe they'll give the child, if the child does something really well, they'll give the child like a good look, you know, a smile or a nod. One of the moms would do that to me when she finally felt like I was understanding her.
She was praising you in her own way.
Yeah, she was.
She's got it. Look at you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was a little dense to many of the parents. But they do something else that I think has been critical to my relationship with Rosie. And that's that they really respect and acknowledge a child's contribution to the family. So if a child runs over and starts to want to help, even if the child can't do the task or the task is even like outside the child's, like, you know, it's too dangerous, the Maya parents will still allow the child some way of helping and contributing to that task. And they can do that by giving the child a really small subtask of what they're doing. So if they're cooking, you know, they can say, hold this plate or, you know, watch me when I do this. I'll tell them to watch. And then if the child does something, they don't just change it and, you know, say, no, that's not right. We do it like this. They will accept the contribution. Maybe they'll fix it a little bit or, you know, guide the child a little bit, but it's much, much more hands off. They never jump in and like grab the child's hand and say, this is how we do it. And then start giving a big lecture. So they really respect the child abilities to learn and eventually contribute. And to me, this has been huge because I realized that I was like just completely thinking Rosie was an incompetent being in the kitchen and at home, and that I had to either she was going to slow me down and make a big mess, or I had to explicitly teach her everything that she was doing. And this was causing huge amounts of tension and arguments. And once I kind of stepped back and like said, okay, yeah, come help me, you know, here, wipe this plate off, or, you know, put this plate away, you know, join me in accepting what she's doing, even if it wasn't perfect, our relationship got so much better.
I want to speak up for a moment on behalf of the Western parents, and we're going to take a break, and I'm going to speak up on behalf of ourselves.
Margaret, I've been at the research again, looking into metabolic health and, more importantly, metabolic flexibility, which turns out is the key to improved energy levels, better sleep, better fitness, all the things. And I found out about all this because we got a chance to try Lumen, the first handheld device that helps you manage your metabolic health.
Lumen works when you breathe into it. If you do that first thing in the morning or after a workout, Lumen measures your metabolism by measuring the amount of carbon dioxide in your breath. It's science, people. That lets you see exactly what's going on in your body in real time.
Then you use Lumen's app to get tailored guidance to improve your sleep, your nutrition, even stress management. If you're interested in figuring out the effects of different sorts of foods on your body, Lumen is a really cool way to see what's actually happening as your body burns different fuel sources.
If you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fresh to get $100 off your Lumen.
That is lumen.me. Lumen.me and use the code Fresh at checkout for $100 off.
Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
In my grandparents' generation, my grandmother was one of 13 kids at the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. The role of children was so different. The role of children was like, you better figure this out quick because we need your hands to till this earth and put out these crops.
Definitely.
We have a very different relationship with our kid, which is like, you're kind of in the way of what I'm trying to do, which is my job that doesn't involve you. Our agriculture and social system has profoundly changed in the last 100 years.
Absolutely. The problem is, though, the kids haven't really changed.
Right. So I'm not saying like, so this doesn't count for you. It's just like, we're not inventing something. We're kind of getting back to something we've lost for a pretty specific reason.
Yeah.
We're getting our kids these plastic lawnmowers, right? And these like little Tykes, you know, knives when they should just have, yeah, like pretend things. Their subtasks should be actual.
Yeah.
Is what the Maya people would say, right?
I mean, I think kids know the difference, right? The kid wants the real thing. They know that it's fake, right? And
right.
How can you contribute with something fake? I really genuinely believe, and there's a lot of data to show this, that little young children have a very strong desire to help and contribute and cooperate with people that love them. And when they don't, they get upset about it. And what happens is over time, that desire is eroded. And that is very specific to the Weird West, is that by the time kids are 7, 8, they no longer want to help. But in fact, in many, many cultures, it's not true. That desire continues and they become much more competent in helping. And so, yeah, I think that that's one of the things we've lost, is this ability to nurture helpfulness in kids instead of like eroding it.
We wait. Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. That idea of like, we've just lost something that is natural. This is not like we're layering something on top.
Yeah.
And I think the same is true when you talk about emotional intelligence. So can you talk a little bit about Inuit emotional intelligence and that aspect?
Yeah, this was such a big shift in my mind. So one of the things that really stood out is this idea. So first of all, that we kind of underestimate children's physical abilities, which is kind of getting at this idea of like not letting them help, not realizing how quickly they can learn to do something like cook even. But we overestimate their emotional abilities and their emotional intelligence. And so we think that like little 18-month-olds and 2-year-olds can control their anger, which is something that like I couldn't do even at like 40 sometimes. You know, it's a really hard thing to do.
Same.
I am just learning it, really, to be honest. If I can learn it at 44, anyone can learn it. But I think what the parents told me over and over again is that they expect children to have tantrums, to hit you, to be disrespectful, because children are these illogical, irrational beings. And they're not, it is your job as a parent to teach them that, to teach them how to settle themselves down, to not hit you. And you do that by showing them that, not by telling them that, which is what I was trying to do, right? Like, would you settle down? Would you stop? What can I do? How can I help you? But in fact, what I needed to do with Rosie was just be calm myself and not meet her emotional outbursts with my own high energy and emotional outbursts, so to speak.
Oh, this is a hard one. This is a real hard one.
It is very hard.
So would an Inuit kid not get to the point where they're striking their parent across the face anyway? Or does the Inuit parent just react differently?
The little ones, like, so when we were with this wonderful family, Sally was a grandmother there. She had a little 18-month-old grandchild, a little boy. And he was like Rosie, right? Like super high energy and willful and, you know, exploratory. And I think he was pulling the dog's tail, a little terrier's tail. And she picked him up and said, you know, we don't do this. And he scratched her face to the point where it was like bleeding. And I saw her like, you know, cringe. And she kind of peeled his fingers off her face and said in like the calmest voice, like, you don't understand that this hurts me. Which first of all is crazy, like, whoa, you know, that she gets that the kid is not personal, right? And then she said, you know, we don't do this. We don't treat each other like this. And she kind of flipped him over and did this like pat him on the butt a little bit gently and then kind of flew him around like an airplane. And then that was it.
Wow.
And what I realized from watching her, which was she and this other mom, Elizabeth, just taught me so much. What they taught me is that when Rosie was upset, I needed to be there for her. But I needed to bring the energy way, way down and almost treat her like this little tiny precious butterfly on my shoulder and just be super calm, super gentle, and let her have that emotion. Like, let her be angry, but show her how to find the calmness in herself.
Okay, but did it work?
So, you know, I think it took her a while to really be convinced that I wasn't going to yell at her, you know, and that I was actually on her team and really was just going to stay calm. You know, to be honest, I think it took about a couple of weeks for her to start calming down. And the tantrums after like a month went from like every day to like, you know, once a week. And then after a month or two, it was like once a month. I mean, it really went fast once I convinced her that this was a different approach and this was a different, that I wasn't going to argue with her and just make everything worse.
This is the Achilles heel of all parenting advice, which is like you try it three times and you're like, nope, that didn't work. All right, moving on. I guess I'll go, you know.
Because they'll be like, no. I push the jack in the box and then the jack in the box pops up and then the jack in the box doesn't pop up. You don't walk away. You crank it faster.
That's right. The kid's still like, I know that jack in the box is in there. I'm not going to stop looking. I'm not going to stop cranking. Exactly.
But I think this is actually something that's weird that we think these things are so yes. fast. And like, you know, we put up a chart on the wall, a chore chart, and kids start doing chores, right? Like, no, like these things are skills, right? Learning to calm yourself down is a skill and it takes practice and time and modeling, right?
And it may be for some kids something that they work on for a lot of their lives. I mean, the kids, people also have very different set points. Like,
exactly.
If you have a kid who doesn't have tantrums, have another kid. That'll probably solve that for you.
Exactly. You know, and the moms and dads told me this over and over again. I would say, well, what age does this happen? And when does she stop having a tantrum? And they were like, well, it just depends on the kid. Like this idea of like 5-year-old, 6-year-old developmental milestones. Again, weird. You know, we didn't have these like 100 years ago. Kids were just kids. And, you know, some were more pains in the butts than others, which is what a lot of parents told me.
That is eternal.
Can you tell us about the 4 pillars of team parenting?
Yeah, it was something I just came up with one day when I was riding my bike, actually, and I was like trying to figure out how to remember this and what these common threads were across the world. And so T is for together. And this is about teaching children how to work together as a team and cooperate. So this is one of the reasons why I saw so much, you know, such calmness and so little resistance with these families is because the parents have taught the children to work together with them as a team and to cooperate. And so this involves actually having the child work with you, right? So if you're in the kitchen, you know, giving them little subtasks to do, you know, instead of telling them to go clean up their room, you say, let's all clean up together. Let's all make our beds together. Things are done together. And I have to say, this does not have to be and is often not the mom and the dad. This is anybody that loves the child and is taking care of the child, you know, a neighbor, a grandparent, a nanny, another child, another sibling. I mean, in fact, in many places in the world, the mom and the dad play a much less role than they do here. But it's just this idea that kids are hardwired to work together. This was what makes us humans, Homo sapiens, is that we love to cooperate and we want to learn how to do that. And so when we constantly push kids to be independent and do things by themselves, we create a lot of conflict. So E is encourage versus force. So the book gives you like a whole suite of tools to try to encourage the proper behavior over time. It takes time. It's not instantaneous. Instead of forcing children, forcing creates conflict, but it also demotivates children, right? You don't like to be forced into doing something. You like to feel like you have a choice and that you figured it out yourself. A is autonomy, which we've talked about. But this is different than independent. You know, American parents are so much about independence. And yet, we give our children very little independence. It's one of the big paradoxes of American parenting.
We're all about independence. You know?
but autonomy is making your own decisions from moment to moment, but always kind of thinking about the group. So is there a way that I can help somebody? You know, am I sharing? Am I being kind? So it's being independent with this constant kind of connection to others. And I think this is what's missing a lot and why we end up, you know, with so much tension in the home is because we haven't really taught each other how to work together and think of each other. And then finally, is minimal interference, which we've talked a lot about. But instead of this knee-jerk reaction being to tell the child what to do and fix and micromanage, we step back. And we pay attention to what they're doing. And then we only help or say anything, interfere when they really need it. And then it's a very gentle interference.
That's such a cornerstone that I took away from this, that idea of like, let's wait for a minute. We don't have to be involved with every second. It's just an interesting perspective shift.
Yeah. And I think kids will surprise you. I mean, Rosie surprises me a lot when, you know, I want to jump in. And then, you know, I think I heard on a podcast once that like the magic happens, you know, right after we want to interfere, right? That the kid learns to grow. And because that's when they're kind of pushing their own boundaries.
And again, they're going to push back too. We say all the time, there's something on the other side of boredom. You know, it's not that they're suddenly going to be like, oh, thank you, mother, for this wonderful opportunity to finally be myself. Like, that's not the moment you're looking for. You're looking to find a practice that helps facilitate this stuff.
Yeah. And you can do less, right? I mean, you can step back and take a break.
Sounds good.
You know, read a book, you know.
During the pandemic, we came up with this idea of never interrupt a happy quarantined person.
Yes.
And I think that's what it is. It's never interrupt a happy child, right? Never say to the baby like, oh, look at this. Like, let them, you know, look at the lint on the rug for as long as they want to.
Absolutely. One of the moms in the Arctic kept saying, just leave her alone. You know, like she's not grumpy. Why are you bothering her? Absolutely.
So we've been talking to Michaeline Duclef. Her book is called Hunt, Gather, Parent, What Ancient Cultures Can Teach Us About the Lost Art of Raising Happy, Helpful Little Humans. Michaeline, tell us about what you're working on now and where we can find you on the internet.
So I'm back at my job at NPR covering mostly COVID, but I'm hoping to do more parenting stories. And I'm also looking to like open up our view of, you know, what American parenting is, because we have so many different voices in our country, right? And I think it would be great to value those and hear more from those. And so if anybody wants to email me and wants me to do a story about, you know, their parenting advice that kind of goes against the weird way, I would love to hear from them. It's mduclef@npr.org.
I'll put the link to that in the show notes. Michaeline, this book is fascinating. I'm so glad we got to talk to you today.
This is just our style, this book. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking.